You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's vanta.com/simplify for $1,000 off.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our expectation series today. This will be the second of these shows. If you missed the one with Sala and Kyle Hamilton, please go back and check on that. But today we're going to talk about Jalen Armour Davis and Rashad Bateman. Look ahead to their coming seasons. And here to do that with me is Slava Cooperstein. Slava, how are you doing?
Doing great, Ken. How about yourself?
No complaints here. Great to have you on, as always, my co-host on the One Last Thing podcast during the regular season. We're looking forward to doing that again, right, Slava?
Absolutely.
All right. A lot of fun. And I find Slava to be a very funny guy, oftentimes a little bit dry, but you'll detect that, no doubt, in some of the things he says today. But let's start talking about Jalen Armour Davis, who is now entering year three at cornerback and has a whopping 78 career snaps, 28 of those coming last year.
Yeah, you know, you have to, I think, look at last year's season, I think, ultimately as a disappointment, just because you want to look at you want to see the guy get on the field, right? You want to see him starting to show that promise that, you know, that you saw when with him coming out of college, with his size and his speed, is just his measurables, right? He just looks like a prototypical corner. So I think objectively his last season was a disappointment, but I think it did show an upward trajectory, certainly from what we'd seen before. I think he had a little more luck in the health department, and you know, had some games where he unexpectedly played in some high leverage moments and acquitted himself nicely. But again, you know, not a ton of snaps, but had some, you know, decent games. I think later in the season against the Bengals, he didn't do too bad, and made some stops on some key downs. So you know, hopefully, the arrow is pointing upward for him.
You know, I'd really love to think that were true. And he played intermittently during the season, and got into 8 games total, 3 games on defense, 5 games just on special teams. So, you know, not what you would hope for. I think the other thing that we have to look at is just how barren the Ravens cornerback room was at the start of last season, with Humphrey out, not knowing who Brandon Stevens was at that point. And Stevens obviously had to be moved from safety to outside corner, which is not a indictment. It's not a endorsement of Jalen Armour Davis that had to happen. I mean, Armour Davis was down a little bit further on the depth chart. He got completely played over by players like Ronald Darby, Rock Yassin, who got limited playing time but got it ahead of Davis, and also of Stevens, who took that starting right corner role. So, yeah, I'm obviously frustrated with what's happened in these seasons with Davis so far. From that perspective, can you paint that in a positive light for us?
Well, it's hard to do that, you know, because I think that you're right. I mean, I think the conditions, if ever there were conditions for Jalen Armour Davis to have taken advantage of and inserted himself into the conversation, it would have been last season for all the reasons that you said. And, you know, I think things have probably gotten worse for him, given that the Ravens doubled down on the cornerback position in the draft. You know, what I can say is that this, you know, this still provides him with an opportunity, right? Because, you know, after, you know, after Marlon Humphrey and after Brandon Stevens, you know, the next, you know, the third outside corner, I think is a big, big open question. You know, I think the negative is that they drafted two corners, especially one in the first round with Nate Wiggins. Yeah. So, you know, he's 100% making the team, right? But whether he's ready to go day one, you know, Jalen Armour-Davis should have an advantage over sort of an untested rookie, even a first round rookie. And so, you know, here's another opportunity for him to make his mark and make game day activation decisions difficult for the Ravens.
You know, I think I would take the other side of that coin in this particular case, particularly with Wiggins. Wiggins is a guy who has played way more football in total at the college level and above. And I've got to look at how many games Wiggins had at Clemson, but it's not an insignificant number. And let's see if I can find him. But anyway, I'll look for that right now as we're talking. And Armour-Davis still didn't play very much at Alabama. He came to the Ravens. He hasn't played very much on defense here at all. Sure. So I'm really trying to find a reason why his experience should matter. He last camp, people were gushing over him. He really did not have a good preseason. In fact, he's just played one preseason game in 2 years with the Ravens, which is another real negative thing that he can't stay on the field for that. You're going to limit your chances to have an impact on the roster when that happens. But I just, Nate Wiggins, first of all, he's elite level guy. He's a top 15 guy in the entire draft who the Ravens happened to get at number 30. There's no way in hell he's not ahead of Jalen Armour-Davis on the roster. In fact, I think there's no way in hell he doesn't start. But that means somebody, whether it's Humphrey or Stevens, needs to either change position or take a platoon role, and possibly both of them. But we'll see how that rolls out. Armour-Davis, I honestly am having a hard time seeing how he gets a lot of playing time this year. And I think kind of the best situation for him probably is he's the fourth or fifth corner, whether he's ahead of TJ Tampa or not.
Yeah, I think the realistic, I mean, when we look at, you know, what's a good season or a great season for these guys, the way that I like to think of it is like, what's a realistic good season? What's a realistic great season? So if you want to get into what would be a good season for Jalen Armour-Davis, you know, he plays well enough to earn spot duty at outside corner. And when I say spot duty, I mean like you said, like fourth outside corner. So really just, you know, a handful of snaps a game, but important snaps, meaningful snaps, you know, fending off probably TJ Tampa and while making key contributions regularly on special teams. And, you know, in that manner, he sort of earns game day activations with some regularity. I would say that would be a good season for him.
Okay. That's, I don't think that's unfair. I've probably set the bar a little lower for him, and maybe I should be setting it higher, but here's what I'd say. Turns a corner in terms of development in camp, earns a roster spot. Okay. So that's the first thing. And he's not guaranteed that, by the way.
Yeah.
I think we have to admit that if somebody else came in and played well, they've got four outside corners who are clearly going to make the team ahead of him. So if there were one more, then Armour-Davis is the kind of guy who could be headed for the practice squad or could be a trade candidate. Either one of those possibilities. But let's say he does earn a roster spot in a good season. That's a 60th percentile outcome for me. He's active on special teams. He plays some snaps as a team's number four or number five outside corner. I'm not going to put any kind of a number on that. I think it's some snaps. I think, honestly, his I don't look at him as an Anthony Averett type number four corner where you're really looking to develop him as a rookie and he gets 65 snaps as a rookie and 200 in his second year, that kind of thing. I don't think he's on that sort of trajectory anymore. I think at this point, any play he gets is probably going to be a function of injury and a bad thing for the Ravens. And I don't being available, being that number four, number five guy, hopefully the Ravens never turn to him. Maybe he's this year's Rock Ya-Sin in a way, a guy who becomes just a forgotten man. I think that would actually be the good outcome for the Ravens, even though it would not be certainly a good outcome for Jalen Armour-Davis.
Yeah, I've got no issue with that. I think that makes sense. I do think that his play on special teams probably, you know, certainly helps him get his game day activations. And, you know, if he's just not a liability as like a rarely used outside corner, I think that is, that's a good season for him.
All right. Well, line us up then. You've got us for a great season. What's a great season from your perspective?
Yeah. A great season, I think, is really a realistic great season for him is only slightly better. I think in that he becomes a regular part of the rotation at outside corner, still probably number four. I don't really see him a realistic way that he becomes number three outside of injury, earning an activation on most or all game days. And really, I think the difference between the good season and the great season is that the Ravens are comfortable enough to give him just more snaps per game where he's meaningfully relieving one of the outside corners. I think Mike McDonald was like to make use of rotation on at least one of the sides. So we'll see how Zach Orr will address that. But particularly when with Marlon Humphrey being, having been in the league a long time, having a lot of tread on the tire and having gone through some injuries, some soft tissue stuff in recent years, they'll definitely want to rotate him a decent amount. And so, Jalen Armour-Davis being able to take advantage of that to be a little bit more of a featured, not a featured role, but a spot role on the team. I think that's a great season for him.
All right. I want to come back to the Humphrey thing in a moment, but I'll just read you what I've got. I hope that his play in the preseason demands not only a roster spot that he plays well enough that he beats out one of the top four guys ahead of him. I guess it could theoretically be any of them. I think it's unlikely to be Stevens in particular, because I think they're going to put a lot of weight on Stevens' play last year. Humphrey is a special case. I want to come back to him later. Wiggins is a rookie, so it's always possible Wiggins either gets soft tissue injuries or is otherwise set back in some way that makes it difficult for him. But I don't think I think the chance of him actually outplaying any of the four is fairly minimal. Tampa's the best shot. But even he's my number six corner in the whole draft. I really like TJ Tampa. I think, he's got corroborative fine coverage statistics the same way Wiggins does. So I don't see that. I mean, obviously the JAD pick was a true flyer in terms of trying to get a talented physical specimen and hope it worked out with almost no college experience. It's still got a ways to go. Still does not really find the guy in coverage, is not able to look back for the football. The reason being that he can't really maintain his contact with the receiver well by keeping one soft hand on him. It's not anything that draws a foul, but just being able to feel for the receiver to understand where he is so he can take that look back for the football. Not something JAD's ever mastered. He's got speed. There's no doubt about that. He can be sticky under those circumstances, but if you could be sticky and not find the football, you put yourself in that huge disadvantage where two of the three things can go wrong for you. Pass interference, call, and the completion. And the receivers are always good at finding the football. That's their job. So in order to be a guy who's effective at corner in the NFL right now, I think you really have to have that soft hand on the receiver and be able to turn for that football and find a way to find the football. So that's the thing that he'll have to get better at in order to really have a great season. And we'll probably see in camp if he's brought any of those skills from maybe some offseason work with a cornerback guru of some sort. And we'll see. But to me, if he has a great season, he'll be on the field for a meaningful trial of snaps. And I think you use similar words. 150 plus snaps would be a mark I'd use. And he'd play well enough that his 2025 roster spot is solidified. and that'll be a fourth year spot. So that's no guarantee on that. I mean, he's a prime cut or trade candidate as a fourth year player, as the sand runs out of the hourglass very quickly. I honestly think he's kind of in that position right now.
Yeah, I think a great way to put it would be that he makes the Ravens really think about his roster spot, you know, really consider, because you're right. I mean, his years in the league will be working against him. But if he offers enough this season that the Ravens are like, you know what, this, you know, we're a better team with this guy, even at year four, than without him. I think that is firmly what I would say is in the great category.
Right. Let's go back to Humphrey for a second, because this came up on the first show talking about Hamilton. But the Ravens' depth at outside corner now is fairly impressive. And, you know, part of this will depend on what TJ Tampa does, whether he looks like he's a guy who's ready to go right away in the NFL. But, you know, the Ravens have a difficulty at safety right now in terms of trying to find how Hamilton can stay on the field with the ultimate flexibility to stay at slot corner on as many downs as possible, as many downs the Ravens would like him to be there. Free safety, he's not really the guy the Ravens want there, which means the Ravens don't have a backup free safety right now, by the way. Marcus Williams is the only guy. Marcus Williams has been hurt a lot. So, you know, that right there should be concerning. The Ravens haven't found that backup. I don't think a guy like Jamal Adams or another box safety who's a good pass rusher or any of these things is the answer for that. I think they need a true split field guy. I'm wondering if Humphrey might not be the guy at this point in his career. And he has, you know, been a press cover guy, but he's also been a great slot corner. So you could push him out. You could push Hamilton out of the slot by moving Humphrey there, which I think would minimize Hamilton in a way. And I think Hamilton actually brings you more in terms of his physicality, even though physicality from Humphrey is very impressive. It might be to the Ravens' benefit to have Humphrey try and move to safety now, or at least start to learn the position for perhaps 2025, if that's his eventual landing spot. It does, I think, make sense for having Hamilton there, and you could honestly change it so that Hamilton is your slot. Humphrey is your slot guy on obvious passing downs. Or maybe he moves back to outside corner on those, and he's a split field safety on other downs.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the best things about Marlon Humphrey is his versatility. I think he does. It's not a jack of all trades, master of none situation. He is excellent when healthy, both in the slot and on the outside, and so. I have no doubt that he would take to learning the safety position really well. But again, for the Ravens to be comfortable with him, I mean, I need to see like Nate Wiggins sort of come on immediately. I would need to, the outside corner position is just so important in today's NFL. I really, really want to see great play very quickly from all those guys on the outside. That being said, I mean, I do think that the way that you kind of address, possible injuries, into the safety position, I think right now is probably moving Marlon to the slot and moving Hamilton, you know, back to the safety position. That's not the optimal role. I mean, you do want it. Like, I think Hamilton's probably the best slot corner in the NFL, honestly. I mean, he's just such a splash playmaker. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think the Ravens hopefully will be able to get, you know, a veteran guy that has those split field qualities sometime later on towards the beginning of the preseason. They've really been pretty good at doing that. And so hopefully, you know, that'll be the way that gets taken care of.
All right. Fair enough. And I promise folks, I'm not going to talk about moving Humphrey to safety on every one of these shows. It just happened to come up on the first two, cause we've got cornerbacks involved in both of these, but let's go ahead and talk about Rashad Bateman a little bit. And, his 2023 season, I think you'd have to say by any almost any standpoint, it was a disappointment. And I go through the statistics really quickly because I don't want to harp on this too much, but 1.09 yards per route run, not what you need. 2.0 yak per reception, 6.7 yards per target, 61.7 passer rating throwing to him, and an 11.1% drop rate. Those are all pretty awful statistics. And I know there are mixed separation numbers on Bateman. Some say he was great. Others say he was not so great. In terms of separation, it's a matter of when you measure that thing. Okay. Do you measure it at the throw? Do you measure it at the top of the stem? Do you measure it at the catch point? You got multiple different points at which you could do that. They're all using the same data, but they don't agree on whether or not Rashad Bateman was an outstanding separation player or not in 23.
Yeah. So, the reason that I chose this combination of players is that I'm probably the biggest Rashad Bateman truther that there is. I think we had a discussion last season where I posed the question to you, which combination of like the top two receivers, in the season, like who, the two leading receivers, what would bode best for the Ravens? And I said Rashad Bateman being the leading receiver would be the best for the Ravens, because I think it just means that so many other things are clicking. I mean, barring obviously like injury, just forcing the opportunity, because Rashad Bateman is the best route runner. He's the most well-rounded wide receiver that the Ravens have, and he needs to be a featured option, featured role player in on the team. Last season, I think there were a lot of things that kind of conspired against him. First of all, the signing of OBJ taking really valuable snaps away from Rashad Bateman. Bateman's injury from the year before sort of extending into the offseason, so he and Lamar didn't get the reps that they needed to have. And, I think the other part, I would put on Lamar. Lamar is really, when it comes to who he throws to, he's really like very much like a vibes kind of guy. And I would really, really, really like to see Lamar do something akin to what Patrick Mahomes did last year. What I remember Peyton Manning having a season where many of his receivers were injured, and he was just making guys off the street just look much better than they were, just by virtue of the fact that, like, you know what, we're going to go through the ultimate trust exercise of the season. It's really important to understand that, like, that you need to develop during the season that trust and that connection. Right. The receivers for the Chiefs let Patrick Mahomes down time and again during the season, but he understood that they would be the guys that he would need to go to at the end of the season when it counted. He would need those guys to make plays. Travis Kelce can't make every play. Travis Kelce is going to be injured sometime. You're going to need your guys to make plays. So let's force these reps together. And sometimes that's going to cost you games. Sometimes that's going to cost you points. But at the end of the day, it's not about week one or week five. It's about what are we going to do in the postseason? I think that's what needs to happen.
You took about my next three bullet points there with that, including the OBJ really hurt Bateman. But you can see a difference in the trust level for OBJ and for Bateman. OBJ got a lot of balls thrown up in 50-50 land. And OBJ was pretty good at coming down with those footballs or drawing penalties. Lamar did not afford the same trust to Rashad Bateman, and he overthrew a lot of deep balls for him. That's a sign of a lack of trust, because you should be in a position where you trust your receiver to go up and get the football. And it wasn't happening with him. I think it's the fifth season option was probably one of the most interesting things in the entire offseason, and the way that fell apart. Normally, this would be the point at which, to remind people, that Bateman would have been eligible to be considered for a fifth-year option after his third year in the league, and he wasn't because he reported late for camp last year. And there was discussion about it at the time. I didn't remember it at all. I don't remember it being discussed since. I don't remember anybody bringing it up and saying, well, you know, he's not really going to get a fifth-year option this year because of it. But reporters have been continuing to ask about it. And I thought very interestingly, Eric DaCosta said, look, the deadline for fifth-year options isn't for a month. I think we'll talk about it then kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just this is a Faxgate-level mess-up. From Bateman's camp. And I don't know whether it's him who should have known or his agent who should have known, but his agent did get fired for it.
Yeah. And that certainly inured to the Ravens' benefit because I think that it just would have forced the Ravens' hand. They wouldn't have given him the fifth year option. He might have thought that he deserved it. Certainly not for his production, but maybe for his ability and sought an opportunity elsewhere. Still, the Ravens did. You know, if you want to talk about JAD having a bad offseason, Bateman had a great offseason. He got he signed a multi-year extension with the Ravens, which I think was appeased both sides. I think the Ravens are paying for the upside because they've seen what Rashad Bateman can do when given the opportunity. And Rashad Bateman seems to know that he hasn't produced how he should have.
You're a lawyer, and I know you do some criminal prosecution as part of...
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Of your job, but you still understand from law school the nature of divisible benefit and what went on there. The problem is that the Ravens are starting from a, or Bateman is starting from a floor of, I didn't report, so I'm not entitled to a fifth-year option. And I expected the number to be significantly higher. It was remarkable. The total contract value here is remarkably low to me. I can't imagine Bateman is particularly happy with it. But I would follow on with you that I think he had a good offseason. All the word from OTAs is that he looks great, ready for a breakout season, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what he did during this offseason in terms of spending time with a receiving guru or whatever it might have been. But I'm hopeful that this is the kick in the pants that he needs to get his career kickstarted here.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that the, you know, extension wasn't particularly long. He's with the Ravens through the 26th season, so he's hitting the market again while he's still, you know, fairly young. So he has an opportunity to put some more, you know, put some more reps and tape together so that his big contract can be the next one. But yeah, it's been a great season for off season for Bateman. You lose OBJ, which to my mind is addition by subtraction. Sign your multi-year extension. He seems healthier. There hasn't been any kind of issues there. Nate Wiggins has been saying that he's the hardest to cover in OTAs, which is not surprising. He is the best route runner in the league, but it's still, I think, pretty good praise when you have such a sudden athlete as Zay Flowers on your team. So things are really pointing upwards for Bateman.
Yeah, he is the Ravens' only true X receiver and certainly their best route runner. I mean, he needs to be that if he's going to get that X role. That separation needs to be maintained or improved from where it's been, because a huge amount of the offense's space is on that weak side of the field where he gets it. And the Ravens have other options. I mean, I expect that DeVontez Walker is going to get some significant time over there. And DeVontez Walker may have a much simpler route tree of hitch and go. He hasn't even been very good at hitch routes in college. You know, the comebacks that he's done, he's not a natural Derek Mason type receiver in that regard. But I do expect that he's going to get some chances there and some chances on the field just in general to run some deep routes, because that's what he does very well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the opportunity is wide open for Bateman, because I think his skill set is, you know, just differentiates itself from the Ravens' other receiving options. And I'm really hoping that he becomes the volume guy, you know, just the chain mover, the, you know, like Zay and Andrews are players who can make splash plays at any given moment and can, you know, be really impactful at like these critical junctures, but down to down, I mean, if Bateman's that guy, that's just, you know, moving the chains, keeping the drives going, you know, just being that reliable receiving threat. I think that's going to be the best version of the Ravens offense.
Yeah. Well, I would agree with that. Let me ask you one more question about Bateman's 3-year deal here. Try and put yourself for a moment in Rashad Bateman's shoes. Does he look at this as a mistake that cost him 1 year of towards free agency and obviously some significant money towards free agency as well? Or do you think he thinks of it as costing him two? Because if the Ravens weren't going to give him a deal after this year, he'd be a free agent after 2024, not after 2026. And even though there's some money involved in this, you know, the contract has some additional dollars to it. It's not that exciting that it would be, you know, more in total than a fifth-year option plus his first-year money in 2024 would have been.
Yeah, I think if I'm Bateman, the realistic comparison I'm looking at is comparing it to getting onto the open market in after this season, after his fourth season, because I don't think that, you know, if he's being honest with himself, I think he would say, look, my production, like whether it's, you know, whoever you want to blame or whatever circumstances you want to blame, that's kind of immaterial. The point is, he hasn't produced to the level that you would pick up his fifth year option, particularly at the receiver position, which is just extremely expensive. So I think that realistically you're saying, okay, instead of getting out onto the open market or being in a negotiating position with the Ravens at the end of 2024, now I'm tied to them. Yeah. I'm tied to them through 2026. So I would say, yeah, two years.
Okay. That's where I am as well. And that's why, as much as there is divisible benefit in this deal, as much as the Ravens, you know, have been fairly frustrated with his play, meaning not unfairly, fairly frustrated with his play over the last year, you know, it's a big hit to Bateman's total time in the NFL. I mean, it just is. It's an enormous hit. And, you know, honestly, maybe that's appropriate because the story is different. 2022 versus 23 for Bateman. In 2022, yeah, injuries held him back. And obviously in his rookie year, that was the case as well. But he had a really good year on a per snap basis at 10.2 yards per target. He didn't repeat any of that in 2023. As much as, you know, people want to point to separation metrics, it did not result in on-field value. Okay, so I can believe it. I can believe PFF says, you know, he was open by as many yards as we saw any receiver by open by. Fine. It didn't result in production is the problem.
Yeah, I think the most concerning and perplexing thing is that the chemistry that we saw at the beginning of 2022, which was just unreal. I mean, they had a mind meld, you know, in those two games that he played. It just completely disappeared. And I don't know why, but those two guys need to figure it out. And whether it's, I'm going to throw the ball at you 10 times a game and we're going to figure this thing out and just be professionals about it, it needs to happen.
Give me a percentage among the three people that I think you can consider be most involved. Give me a percentage of the blame you put on Bateman, a percentage on Jackson, and a percentage on Monken. I'm going to write mine down.
Ooh.
Give you a chance to this.
Ooh, that's interesting. I do love blaming people.
That is a prosecuting attorney's kind of viewpoint there.
Man. Oh, man. Okay. All right. I'm thinking.
All right. If you're writing it down, I'll just announce mine first if you
want. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to say it's 50% on Bateman because he's got to take the largest share of the blame because in the end, it's his problem. If he doesn't solve it, nobody else will solve it for him necessarily. I'm going to put 30% of the blame on Jackson. I think Jackson has been notorious for not looking at certain receivers. Miles Boykin had a lot of the same problems. And I'm going to put 20% of the blame on Monken because I think you can still scheme the plays to make Bateman the primary more often than he did. And maybe, you know, one of the things Monken has said at on the podium is, you know, yes, some of it's scheme, but another part of it is gaining the trust of your teammate and getting them to throw you the ball like they will in basketball, getting the manager's trust to be a key pinch hitter at a key point in time and whatnot. So that'd be my numbers, 50, 30, 20, Bateman, Jackson, Monken.
I definitely have a different take on it. I put 60 on Lamar. I just don't like, I think he needs to grow up as far as, you know, this idea of like the guys that he's buddies with and just forcing the ball to them. You know, it's not just, I don't look at Bateman. It's, I force bad passes to Andrews. And, you know, you've definitely mentioned in you know, a number of episodes about how many, you know, what the passer rating towards Andrews is and how many interceptions he, you know, in some seasons that he's thrown while targeting Andrews. So like forcing balls towards him. Actually, you know what? I'm going to downgrade that to 55 and reallocate 5%. You know, is Lamar, just in order to take that next step as a quarterback, he needs to understand that he needs to be able to go to any guy in any situation. You know, he almost like does the job of the defender when he, you know, when he just is like, you know what, I'm not even going to bother to look at Bateman. Like at that point, you're cheating towards Zay, you're cheating towards Andrews, you're making things harder for everybody by not involving your guys. And even just getting a couple early passes to your guys, you know, I think that's what needs to happen. Bateman, I put it 20. Yeah. Bateman, I put at 20%. It is Bateman's problem for sure. You know, I mean, you know, Lamar's not getting fired, right? You know, they have a massive investment in Lamar. But in terms of, you know, I look at Bateman, I look at the film, and I think, you know, as far as I can tell, he's getting open with regularity. He's not quitting on routes. He had some plays last season where he really bailed out bad passes by Lamar. And, you know, Lamar's overthrowing Bateman time and again. And it's like, okay, dude, like, are you just going to keep overthrowing him? Or are you going to try to get into some contested catch situations? Because if you're just going to overthrow him every single time, I really don't know what Bateman's supposed to do about that. So that's kind of how I look at that. And then Monken, I put at 25%. You know, I think Monken misused both Bateman and Zay at certain junctures in the season. You know, when you and I would go over the games last season, we were really frustrated by the average depth of target for Zay Flowers, right? Like Zay Flowers was, yes, you know, just, you know, this behind the line of scrimmage crap or these short, you know, short routes. Like later on in the season, when Zay Flowers sort of became more of a deep threat, you know, I think that was a better use of his abilities, at least intermediate to deep. And Bateman, I think, would be really useful in the kind of intermediate area more so than Zay would have been. And so, you know, I think when you're misusing one piece, you start to misuse some other pieces. And I don't think the scheme was always accentuating those guys' abilities. I think Monken was in love with this idea of, like, you know, Zay can, you know, take it to the house from anywhere. And yes, he does have that ability to an extent, but let's play to these guys' strengths and then develop the other areas of the game as we go along. And so I think Monken outthought himself a little bit with how he schemed Bateman and Zay. So I put about a quarter of the blame on him.
Okay. Fair enough. And different. I was a well argued, you know, attribution of those to those three men. And I don't know that there's anybody else that I could put this on. I know there's a lot of people who would put it on Harbaugh. They don't really understand the mechanics of how an NFL game is called, I don't think. You know, yeah. It's certainly possible that John Harbaugh could say something on the headset to say, hey, whatever you have to do in this second half, you get Bateman involved. Everybody is cheating off him. You've got to fix this, Todd. He could say something like that, but he doesn't have the direct input to call the play to the huddle,
yeah,
and make that change directly. In the end, Monken has to do that. So certainly could get some blame on that, but I would not honestly put it on Harbaugh.
And I wouldn't put it on EDC for signing OBJ either, because
that's a good point.
I look at the OBJ signing. I really do look at the OBJ signing as it's something that had to be done to appease Lamar. So I put that blame, that additional blame on Lamar, and then that additional blame on Monken for saying, like, look, you know, or even like, yeah, me on Monken, because OBJ didn't earn the snap share that he was getting, in my opinion.
I will say that OBJ was very effective on a per snap basis, but there were lots of reasons why he didn't earn his money last year. Largely, you know, it's hard for him to stay on the field at his age. And
yeah.
But on a per snap basis, I don't have any problem at all with OBJ's production on a per target basis anyway, at the very minimum.
And he definitely exceeded my expectations. I'm not trying to be an OBJ hater. I just, you know, I think there were better options, and I think that the team suffered from that. Yeah.
Well, that's fair enough. Let's move on to Bateman and what constitutes a good and a great season for him this year. And obviously there are some thoughts that are through the roof. If you got to Ravens Twitter, I'm sure you can have him for up to 1,300 or 1,400 yards, but tell me what a good season is from your perspective.
Yeah, I think a good season is that he rediscovers the rapport that he had with Lamar that we saw in early 2022. I think it's very realistic because they had it, and we've not heard anything that would suggest that there's like some rift between the two guys. They just need the reps. Stays healthy. That's implicit with everybody, but it's a special thing to highlight with Bateman, and starts, between 13 and 14 games. Becomes a reliable top three go-to receiving option for Lamar alongside Andrews and Zay, just like very firmly in that top three mix. Some games he might be the featured receiver, other games he might be number three. And as far as statistics, 800 plus yards, 6+ TDs.
800 plus yards and 6 TDs. Okay. So I have exactly the same number of games played, 14. I want to see his speed and route running show up. I want to see him develop chemistry with Lamar, and I'll set the bar for a good season at 8.5 yards per target on 80 plus targets. So if it's the minimum in both categories, that's 680 yards. You put me down for that right now. That, I think, is the 60th percentile of his play, is 8.5 and 80 plus targets. How about a great season for you?
Great season for me. Just bump up the starts, 14 to 15 games. Competes with Andrews for the lead receiving option for Lamar. Gets the majority of the volume, really becomes that guy that's getting the majority of the targets. really locks into a mind meld with Lamar that we've seen that can be really special with some receivers. Statistically, you know, at around the 1,000 yard mark, I mean, you know, if we're talking 900 something or whatever, that's fine too. And then closer to 10 touchdowns, you know, I think the way that this offense operates and is constructed, it's really hard to get, you know, for any one person to stack up a ton of touchdowns necessarily, except for maybe Andrews, because he's such a red zone threat, but closer to 10 touchdowns.
Yeah. I that's a really good point, is both yardage and touchdowns very hard to do, you know, per snap. Productivity is another matter. And I think that's something the Ravens, we kind of have a frame. You're never going to be as good in terms of top per snap productivity with the Ravens, just because the way they run their offense, and they have for years, certainly now. But what I want to see is more notional. I want to see the combination of speed and wiggle go to another level, which really means the wiggle needs to go to another level, and the speed needs to be able to be right there, a clean, injury-free season. If it's a great season, it's not unrealistic that he plays 17 games. There probably is a 20% chance or more that at least that he would play 17 games. And so I think that's a realistic requirement for it. What I want to see out of Speed and Wiggle is that I expect this year he's going to have more opportunity than ever to sit out there on an island. There will be more expectation that they throw at him, and there'll be much more attention both on Zay, on Andrews maybe a little bit more, but Andrews always had a lot of attention, so I'm not even worried about that, but on Zay and Derrick Henry. And so when you have to load the box up for Derrick Henry and you have, you know, Rashad Bateman on the field lining up at the X in island coverage, he has got to take advantage of that freaking situation and turn that into a big deal. I wouldn't say his yards per target needs to be a lot higher. I think his volume will be higher if he really makes that work. But I'd say something approaching 9 yards per target. If it was over 9, fantastic. I don't think he's going to be the first Ravens receiver in a long time to be at 10 yards per target, but I don't know. If he were to be in the 9 yard per target range, that puts him back in the Torrey Smith range, despite being really a possession receiver at the heart of it. And I think part of increasing his yards per target is increasing his yards after the catch ability. Now, that should be possible for him if he's part of the active first read part of that offense. So slants are a big way you get a ton of yards after the catch, or you can, because you can take a slant to the house. Being a first look on the deep balls is something you really want him to be. So have a boot play schemed up where he's the deep receiver. Fantastic. Doesn't always have to be Zay. Doesn't even always have to be Tez Walker. It has to be somebody who can make that work and maybe be a little bit confusing at it. I think the characteristics are all there for him to do this. Derrick Henry, we hope he'll have a healthy season. If he does, I think he's going to have a good season. And if that's the case, then I think Bateman is one of the players who can really take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you have Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, and Derrick Henry on the field, those are all players that have like a certain like gravitational pull to them. I don't think that it's really possible, unless he were just to have an unreal season, that Bateman develops that gravitational pull on this team just because of who those other guys are. But if he's able to regularly take advantage of that gravitational pull that the other guys have, he's going to have a phenomenal season. And you know, it's just, you know, it's very hard to, it's not even saying anything bad about Bateman that he wouldn't have that gravitational pull, because he's, you know, Zay Flowers is such a sudden athlete. Mark Andrews, you know, has that mind meld with Lamar and is just a huge receiving that, he's just a gigantic man. Derrick Henry, we all know what he can do, and you know, with Lamar being the force multiplier for the run game, you know, it's going to be, you know, if he has a healthy season, he's going to, I think, be pretty tremendous. So So if Bateman can just take advantage of that, I think he's going to have a great season.
Yeah. And we can both, and I think we both have put a fair amount of the burden on Lamar to give him lots of one-on-one opportunities against those receivers. We haven't even talked about Isaiah Likely in this whole thing. Yeah. And just the amount of legitimate receiving mojo this Ravens team brings to the table is pretty damn good. I mean, it's, you know, Nelson Aguilar, we haven't talked about him and some of the really positive things he can do, even if he's just assisting, you know, on a route like he did against the Rams last year to get Zay free. Anyway, great possibilities. Give me a last, any final thoughts on Rashad Bateman? Are you as optimistic about his 2024 season as I'm seeming to gather?
Yeah, I am. I just really think OBJ is really addition by subtraction. You know, just not numerically fewer mouths to feed, right? Because OBJ's spot has been replaced, but in terms of who's going to be commanding targets, there's less fewer targets being commanded by different guys that were like slotted ahead of Bateman. So, you know, I think things really line up in terms of the skill types that are available, where Bateman fits into all of that, who he has around him. And also just, you know, having a bona fide star in the backfield too, that doesn't hurt either. Somebody who's going to be commanding a lot of attention in Derrick Henry. I think things are, you know, he should have every opportunity to make a huge impact this season.
All right. Well, Slava, always a pleasure to talk football with you, and I'll look forward to doing that more in the upcoming season. But tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
On Twitter, at Slava Cooperstein. That's SlavaKuperstein.
All right, outstanding. Other folks out there still looking for people to do two different shows. A recollection series still wide open. If you'd like to take a player you'd like to talk about from the Ravens past, I always want to keep doing that for the rest of the season. Hopefully have some additional people with some of the older Ravens that they're interested in. And again, we're not looking for the Mount Rushmore Ravens. Nobody who's really in the Ring of Honor right now are we looking to talk about. So somebody had to ask me about Jamal Lewis the other day. I had to say no on that. I'm looking for players who are a step down from that at least. And Slava in particular took Laquan Williams, which is about as many steps down as you get. So that's all the way at the bottom of the basement steps. So it was an interesting one and a lot of fun. But anybody you have good memory of, it could be any of those for any reason, personal, or you met him at training camp or anything like that. We'll say also doing the expectation series here today with Slava, there are still a few slots open. I pick the pairings, you pick from among those pairings. So if you have a really strong feeling you want to do one of those, hit me up in the next day or two before they're all gone. And appreciate your contributions to this. Slava, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.